Greetings, and welcome to the first quarter earnings conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press the star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Friday, May 10th, 2019. I would now like to turn the conference over to Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer, IBI Group. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. We appreciate you taking the time to join us on this first quarter 2019 results conference call. IBI Group released their first quarter results yesterday afternoon, and the complete financial statements and management discussion and analysis for the period ended March 31st, 2019 were filed on SEDAR and have been posted on IBI Group's website at www.ibigroup.com. Joining me on the call this morning is our Chief Financial Officer, Stephen Taylor. Prior to commencing our formal remarks, I would ask Stephen to read the following disclaimer about forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott. On behalf of IBI Group, I'm required to note that some of our statements made on today's call might contain forward-looking information. We caution listeners not to place undue reliance on our forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities law. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities and available on the company's website, the SEDAR website, or by contacting the company. I would also like to point out that all amounts discussed today are in Canadian dollars unless otherwise stated. I'll now turn the call back to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. Through the first quarter, IBI demonstrated the strength of our business model and commitment to successfully executing our technology-focused strategic plan. IBI Group continued to deliver solid results in Q1 2019, including adjusted EBITDA that was 17.6% higher than the same period in 2018, with a healthy Q1 2019 adjusted EBITDA margin of 11.5%. Our transformational pivot to a technology-driven design firm is expected to provide further improvements in IBI's margins and efficiencies. Our 2019 total revenue forecast is maintained at approximately $374 million, with the relative geographical contributions remaining consistent with 2018. We currently have approximately $392 million of work that is committed and under contract for the next 5 years, translating to approximately 12 months of backlog. Building on the momentum achieved in 2018, we are pleased with the first quarter performance of our intelligence practice, which achieved a margin of 16.4% and accounted for 18% of overall revenue. We are well on our way to achieving our target of intelligence accounting for 20% of overall revenue with a 20% EBITDA margin by the end of 2020. IBI's buildings practice continued to grow in Q1 2019 with a 6.9% increase in net revenue relative to Q1 last year, generating an operating profit margin of 19.9% versus 14.9% in 2018. We continue to see strength in the mixed-use high-rise area with several new projects in Montreal, Mississauga, and Vancouver, as well as selected markets in the United States, including California. These are in addition to major planning projects related to mixed-use development across the firm. In terms of our infrastructure practice, delays in the approval and advancement of new large-scale Canadian infrastructure contracts, particularly in Ontario with the change in government, led to a 4.9% decline in net revenue compared to Q1 18, with margin compression of 5.1%. Despite the slight pause, we are continuing work on other infrastructure projects in areas such as environmental assessment and major transit projects in Toronto, Ottawa, Edmonton, and Tel Aviv, which we believe will contribute to stable 2019 revenue stream for infrastructure. We do expect to see demand for infrastructure projects increasing through the latter part of 2019, but are not anticipating that large-scale traditional P3 projects will have a material impact on our infrastructure work until late in the year, if not into 2020. In the U.S. operating segment, our efforts to enhance performance through cost-saving initiatives and increases in backlog in the region have continued to show results. Adjusted EBITDA from the U.S. operating segment was $1.9 million, a significant increase year over year and consistent with the positive trend over the previous four quarters. We believe that our U.S. operating segment will return to normalized levels by the end of the year as we realize better efficiency with existing contracts coupled with growth in our private sector work. Several of our clients in the building side, particularly on the West Coast, are venturing down to the major U.S. urban centers, and we are following them. This provides our clients with seamless support while enabling IBI to achieve enhanced margins on those opportunities. I'm pleased to announce that yesterday IBI launched Travel IQ, a cloud-based traveler information solution to assist transportation agencies across North America and Mexico in the collaboration and management of their highway operations. Travel IQ is designed to provide real-time information on traffic conditions, construction, and events, including weather, to improve information sharing across and between various agencies, including highway operators, as well as the private sector. Travel IQ is a software as a service structure that is hosted on the Microsoft Azure platform, which IBI has also transferred our Inform asset management system to the Azure platform. We believe that the cooperation with Microsoft will accelerate the marketing, adoption, and sales of the systems, providing a basis for growing recurring revenue. The adoption of the Azure platform is an extension of IBI's longstanding relationship with Microsoft. IBI has adopted Microsoft's Office 365 platform with its various offerings across all offices. This provides an important basis for collaboration and operational efficiencies within IBI, and it provides a platform for our initiatives with big data, analytics, bots, and chatbots, all of which enhance the quality, timeliness, and efficiency of IBI's core professional services. On another front, IBI assumed responsibility for the ongoing support and maintenance of Open Trip Planner from transit industry leader Conveil. Open Trip Planner is used globally to provide transit passenger information, and this is a natural extension to IBI's transit event reporting and a complement to our Travel IQ service, all of which are important elements of mobility as a service. IBI's traveler information technology has been a significant contributor to our intelligence practice for more than a decade, and this launch strengthens our position for further growth. With global urbanization set to continue its rapid pace, IBI expects increased demand for our buildings and infrastructure services. And at present, we are leading some 55 major urban planning projects across the breadth of the firm, covering some 5,000 acres of development that are ideally suited for smart city or smart building solutions. We also have 425 buildings under design or construction across the firm, each representing an opportunity for IBI to incorporate technology, driving revenue, and enhancing efficiencies and improving connectivity for our residents and administrators alike. We have developed a significant body of knowledge regarding bots, data analytics, chatbots, and we are seeing major opportunities to apply these services outside of IBI to other companies, creating a new area of business for IBI. To sum up, we are very pleased about the market opportunity we have seen with our technology offerings in the coming years. Our solid performance centered around the urban environment provides us with a robust platform for future growth and performance. I will now turn the call over to Stephen for an overview of our financial performance during the quarter.
Thank you, Scott. Total revenue for the quarter was $93.7 million, up $3.2 million over quarter one 2018 due to strong operating performance in our U.S. segment, supported by continued stable contributions from the Canadian operations. Our Canadian and U.S. performance benefited from continued work on large transit and P3 projects, and IBI was awarded new contracts in Canada and certain parts of the U.S. in our intelligence sector. Total adjusted EBITDA for the first quarter was $10.7 million, or 11.5% of revenue, compared to $9.1 million or 10.1% of revenue for the same period in 2018. Compared to Q4 of 2018, IBI's Q1 2019 adjusted EBITDA rose 30.5%. U.S. net revenue totaled $26.5 million for Q1, up over 6% versus Q1 2018, while Canadian net revenues rose 4.4%. We generated $1.8 million of adjusted EBITDA from our U.S. operating segment, which is a significant increase over last year and reflects the success of our restructuring operations and cost efficiency implementations. This quarter, we added a new metric to our reporting, net income from operations, designed to mitigate some of the noise quarter-to-quarter caused by non-cash items, which can cause significant fluctuations in net income and don't always result in meaningful indications of operating performance. For the first quarter, IBI's net income from operations was $4.7 million, 20.5% higher than Q1 2018, and generated 13 cents per share basic and diluted EPS compared to 10 cents for the 2018 period. Net income was $2.4 million in Q1 2019 compared to $7.6 million in Q1 2018. The current quarter's figure includes a pre-tax loss in fair value of other financial liabilities of $9 million compared to a pre-tax gain of $4.1 million in the same period last year as a result of changing market conditions. In addition, this year's net income reflects the impact of implementing IFRS 16 leasing standards, which resulted in property leases being classified as right-of-use assets and obligations related to the lease payments as lease liabilities on the statements of financial position and the balance sheet. Cash flows from operating activities in the quarter totaled $7.5 million. A 114% increase over the $3.5 million generated in the same period in 2018. The increase stems from higher net income net of items not affecting cash, an increase in non-cash operating working capital offset by higher net interest and income taxes paid. Consistent with prior years, Q1 and Q2 tend to be periods of higher cash utilization for IBI, reflected in a $1.8 million reduction in bank borrowings. While the second half of the year is typically cash generating, we anticipate a similar trend in 2019 with excess cash generated in the second half being directed to debt repayment with a goal of reducing our bank debt by approximately $10 million by year-end 2019. I'll now turn things back over to Scott.
Thanks, Stephen. We're very pleased with IBI's first quarter results, which demonstrated continued performance and execution of our core business, with increased focus on incorporating technology solutions across the value chain, including the launch of Travel IQ coupled with our strategic Microsoft engagement. IBI continues to make great progress on advancing new value-add software as a service offerings for our clients while strengthening our recurring revenue systems. Operator will now be ready for questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. One moment for our first question. The first question comes from Michael Tufome with TD Securities from Toronto, Ontario. The line is open. Please proceed.
Thanks. Good morning.
Morning, Michael.
Over the last several quarters, you've introduced several new intelligence solutions and then obviously another one just yesterday. I'm wondering if you can talk in general about the client response, customer response so far that you've had to some of those new product launches.
It's been, first, very positive. Because it's shown generally that our relationships with the clients now evolve from simply providing professional services, a guidance about value creation, into actually being a partner in many ways with them. If I look at the specific projects, first the launch of our Smart City platform last year, It has been deployed in India, and we are seeing very promising opportunities, and we look forward to further announcements in the quarter about other deployments in India. We've also used it as a platform to introduce technology into campuses and into buildings, and every one of those campus areas, that 55 master planning projects that I mentioned of some 5,000 acres, when we talk to the development clients that we're working for, they immediately see the opportunity to apply then that technology. So we're working on how we can then work with them to modify, adapt, and refine the technology to their needs. I must say it puts us into a different kind of conversation with them. We become more of a partner in the value proposition stream. The Inform platform for asset management, we've now structured into two elements. One is Inform for transportation, and the second is Inform for buildings. We have approximately seven deployments, if you will, or clients for the Inform in transportation. And we are refining the Inform for buildings, in particular related to healthcare, so that it becomes part of the continuing work that we do in healthcare from planning right through to then the delivery of the building. The Blue IQ is a unique product. It has a relatively small client base, but we are seeing now traction because of the value proposition of the Blue IQ platform. We're seeing traction with some very significant water delivery clients across North America. Finally, with the Travel IQ platform, we already have clients from 14 states and two provinces that use that platform. But where it's set up, although software as a service, is really set up for their unique needs. By launching Travel IQ across North America as a consistent platform, we see that we are able to offer the same capabilities to a wider host of clients, not only states and provinces, but also cities and counties. And we see that it's a unique offering whereby we would be able to engage these clients in a much more cost-effective way. We then become the, if you will, facilitator of the data exchange. So we're really quite enthused by it. It's also led, quite frankly, to a recent win whereby we're combining our Travel IQ, the Conveil open software platform, and our transit information services in Florida. And that was just a very recent win this past couple of days. So we're really very enthused by this whole approach that we're taking that is a different go-to-market arrangement where it's not just our time and hours that we're charging, but it's a different value proposition. We're very enthused by the results.
Thanks very much. That's great color. Just to build on that, Scott, if we look at the year-over-year revenue growth in the intelligence practice in Q1, up just around 5%, recognizing that you know this is not an overnight thing, and it takes time. Is that the sort of rate of growth we should expect over coming quarters in that practice area or in that business unit?
I would say for the moment that would be a reasonable range and a reasonable assumption. I would say that our expectation beyond the next year or two, though, is that it would accelerate. But certainly for the next year and a half, it would. I would see 5% as being a reasonable assumption for growth.
Okay. And then if we look at the margin improvement in your buildings business unit, EBITDA margins are up about 500 basis points year over year in the quarter. Can you talk about what drove that margin strength? And is that 20% number for the margin that you saw in the first quarter, is that a sustainable sort of rate of EBITDA margin in buildings?
I wouldn't plan on that margin on a long-term basis, but we're certainly seeing it in the quarter and certainly what we're living through now, and a lot of it has to do with the efficiencies that we realized by the application of productivity tools that we've developed and applied, but also by simply the scale of the business that we have in the building sector. And our ability to execute in such an efficient manner.
Okay. And then I guess sort of the opposite situation happened in infrastructure, where the margins were down roughly 500 basis points. And I know you did talk about how you expect to see some additional activity in infrastructure. But I guess I'm just wondering how quickly do those margins in infrastructure rebound back up to closer something to what they've historically been?
I wouldn't see that we'll see any significant improvement until early next year. There's a major program of infrastructure improvements in Ontario that goes through to 2040 that represents major investments in transit, bus rapid transit, and subway extensions that represents some almost $30 billion of work that, in fact, IBI was a part of the development of that plan. But and it's all the known projects that are on the list, including here Ontario, Hamilton, and Finch West. But the process has slowed down with the change in government. So we don't see anything that is going to accelerate that. But the base market needs are significant across the country, in fact, even globally. And we see other opportunities in BC where we're putting together teams now for Broadway and Surrey.
Okay, so just to be clear, on the margin front, Scott, we should expect it to stay around these kinds of levels until you get that pickup sort of over the medium to longer term in the work?
That's right. I wouldn't expect any significant change in the near term.
Okay. And then just lastly, Stephen, in terms of the IFRS 16 impact on adjusted EBITDA, $3.4 million in the quarter. Last quarter, you talked about a full year 2019 EBITDA impact of about $21 million. And I guess, you know, at the time, I think that was an estimation. But you're tracking quite a bit below that. Do we see a ramp up in the impact going forward, or is what we saw this quarter more indicative of what we should see in future quarters?
I think, Mike, what you will find with the new standard is that we have a number of significant size offices, Vancouver and Calgary being two of them, where those are very new leases, and the way that the accounting in the standard works is that you tend to find a bigger impact to P&L in at the beginning of the leases, and that starts to sort of wind its way down. Most of these leases are of a 10-year term, so we will find gradual decreases in the amounts that were reported in the first quarter of this year through 2019 and on into 2020 as well. We don't really have any large offices that are up for where the lease is up for renewal. The impact will not only be on the lease charge under IFRS 16 gradually winding its way down over time, but our CapEx should moderate as well as our need to redo offices decreases.
Okay, so we should expect $3.4 million or less going forward for the next several quarters.
That's correct.
Okay, and just lastly, to clarify on IFRS 16, unless it's in the financials, but can you give me the split between depreciation and incremental finance costs in that $3.4 million for this quarter?
Well, the amortization of the right-of-use asset was $3.2 million. And the incremental interest cost is about $800,000.
Okay. All right, that's all right. I have. Thank you.
The next question comes from Frederic Bastien with Raymond James from Vancouver, BC. Please go ahead.
Good morning. First, I want to commend you for starting to break down the results by practice. I find that quite useful and some good visibility here. Secondly, Treble IQ sounds quite promising to me, so I'd like to gauge your level of excitement around that particular smart product. Where does it rank relative to the other products you've introduced in the past year?
It's a more proven product in terms of the market. I think as I made note earlier, we already have some 14 states and their major states like California and New York, and two provinces, Alberta and Ontario, that are already using the basic platform sitting on the cloud. The difference with this launch is that in each of those deployments, it is unique and specific to those states. With the new platform, it's going to be a common North American-wide platform, allowing us to then use the same service to configure new users without having to develop any more software. It's simply a configuration function. But also now the data and information exchange has the possibility to be configured then across multiple entities. So you would have a fleet, for example, in the private sector, logistics companies and the like, would be able to see where those states have been included, a complete summary of events across the trips from beginning to end of construction events and all of the other information that the highway agencies are responsible for. More than that, we're able to then set up new companies or new clients. Instead of it taking a few months, it can be done in a few weeks at a much reduced cost. So the whole objective here is to capture market share while maintaining the same platform. So we're not going to see the same margins for the first period if we only have 14 clients as we do now. But as we scale, and it really is a highly scalable platform, we see that the margins will reflect much more what we see in the general tech sectors of 20, 25%, 30% margins on new clients.
Okay, that's useful. Thank you so much. Just to go back on the swings we saw in the margins for buildings and infrastructure, you gave some good explanation on both, but did sort of the struggles you had in the U.S. and the restructuring had an impact also on the buildings improvement this year?
Oh, very much so. Our whole new approach to the U.S. Is centered around using the engines, if you will, of production out of Vancouver or Canada West and out of Canada East and going down along the coasts. And we have, as I mentioned, we have clients in Vancouver that we've done tremendous work for who are now seeing the great opportunities in California and all along the coast where we're already in those markets. We're doing the services we have longstanding relationships with them in Vancouver. So it's just such a logical extension of how we use those powerful engines in those major centers and then extend those services down along the coast. And we're getting better rates because of the exchange, but the productivity improvements are just so powerful. And I should say that one of the other things that we're starting to see, especially in the major urban centers where there is much more of a tech focus, is that the demand for housing is very similar to what we're seeing in Toronto and Vancouver, which are also major tech centers. So Silicon Valley, San Francisco area, massive shortages in housing. And in fact, the number that's being quoted is something in the order of a need for 3.5 million housing units in California, largely in those major centers of Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego.
Okay, cool. Thanks. One last question for Stephen. Receivables aged over 90 days has been creeping up for now second consecutive quarter. Can you speak to that a bit and see if you have any issues with the increases we've seen?
Yeah, Frederick, the issue with receivables over 90 days is It's directly related to some of the investment we've been making in P3 projects, the big transit projects that we're involved in. We have, I think I said last quarter, we had in excess of $25 million worth of working capital tied up in those P3 projects and pursuits. That trend has continued upward in the first quarter. We are taking action, and as well under the normal contractual terms, we expect. I had said before that I expected in Q3 and Q4 of this year that those numbers will start to head in the opposite direction, and that will be our over 90 days in terms of receivables will be back to historic levels as we go into Q1 and Q2 of 2020. So I'm not concerned about it. Obviously, I would prefer not to be making the investment in working capital, but this is what happens when you get involved in those big P3 projects.
Okay. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
Thank you very much. I want to thank everybody for joining us this morning, and we look forward to the next quarter.
That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines.